It's Byline on WFPL. I'm Gabe Bullard in for Rick Howlett. I'm here with Marcus Green from the Courier-Journal. Marcus, you write, among other things, about the goings-on with the Kentucky Fair Board, and it has been a busy few weeks. It seems like in the last couple months, we've heard more about the Kentucky Fair Board and read more about the Kentucky Fair Board than most people probably think about it in years.
Yeah, it has been an interesting few months on a variety of fronts with the Fair Board. Most recently, the Fair Board, which is the operator of the Louisville Arena Authority, on Monday, the operator of the KFC Yum Center on behalf of the Louisville Arena Authority, on Monday, the Arena Authority voted to pursue a different direction in management. They're going to interview and decide on a new operator here in the coming weeks.
Right, and the manager of the arena handles a little bit of everything from just day-to-day operations of the arena to, I guess, they hire someone who books the acts that come through.
Right. It's basically the day-to-day management, the booking of events, just the operations, making sure the floors are clean and the lights are on and the utilities are paid and anything that's required in running a facility like the KFC Yum Center.
So why is the Arena Authority looking for someone new?
Well, this all really began late last summer, when the Arena Authority commissioned a review of the building's operations. At that point, it had been about a year since the arena opened. They wanted to get a sense of how it was running, how smoothly things were going. And when that report came back and was released in April, its findings included some things that led them to want to move in a different direction. Particularly, it showed that the cost of operating the arena with the Fair Board as manager was quite expensive, and due to that and some other issues were raised, things like they wanted the general manager of the arena to have more control. The consultant wanted the general manager to have more say over booking events, and at the time the general manager was not in place. He'd been fired by the Fair Board. So the Arena Authority decided, in light of that management review, to move in a new direction.
And I talked with Metro Council President Jim King, who's on the Arena Authority board, an ex officio member, and he said this isn't so much, or in his opinion, it wasn't so much of an indictment of the Fair Board's management, but he was saying, you know, there are issues with how it's being managed, and he doesn't think it's malicious necessarily so much as the Fair Board has its hands full operating other things, and the arena at this time especially is in need of a more hands-on, more focused management.
Right, and to be fair, when you think about the arena and the financial issues with paying off the debt, the goal of getting a manager that's in there and is more efficient and can produce an operating profit is really only an issue because the primary way of paying off the bonds, which is a district called the Tax Increment Financing District, which really means that there's a 6-square-mile area around the arena, and it counts on certain state sales tax and other taxes to basically increase every year, and then a portion of that is returned to help pay off the bonds. That's not been performing as well as anticipated. So that puts more pressure on the operator to just really squeeze out and make things very efficient and result in a profit.
Right, and that TIF district and even the higher operating costs were both mentioned when Moody's downgraded the bonds on the arena.
Exactly, and Moody's did that here recently. S&P, Standard & Poor's, has hedged in a little bit of a different direction. They don't believe it's as dire as Moody's. It should be noted, though, that while Moody's has downgraded the bonds to what is commonly called junk status, it's not investment grade. Moody's raises some points about their concerns with the operating costs, the revenues being available from that TIF to pay off the bonds. Moody's has essentially raised their concerns. Standard & Poor's has not gone as far, but it clearly is not what the arena wants less than 2 years into operations.
And is there serious hope with the Arena Authority that a new manager is going to turn this around and improve the bond ratings and lead to a more secure paying off of the debt?
Well, that was mentioned briefly at the Arena Authority meeting on Monday, that all of these steps they're taking, they hope will result in a stronger financial situation down there.
And a few other things that are happening that you've written about, news about Bluegrass Boardwalk, also a formerly Kentucky Kingdom. The state approved tax incentives most recently for this Bluegrass Boardwalk group to start renovating Kentucky Kingdom.
Right. On Wednesday, the state agency that approves tax credits for tourism projects approved the application that Bluegrass Boardwalk had put in. This is the Cook family that operates Holiday World in southern Indiana. And this is one of a few steps that they need, things that they have to have happen before they can open this park. Aside from the news that was approved, there hasn't been a lot that's changed in terms of the goal, which they have of opening the park in 2014. Originally, the hope had been 2013. That's mm-hmm. been pushed back, in part because they're going to need time to upgrade the rides and to make sure that the attractions there, which have fallen into some degree of disrepair, that they're in good shape and they're safe for people that are going to come out and use the park. But clearly, the approval on Wednesday was a key step in moving that plan forward.
Right. Your colleague Sheldon Schaefer had written about some of the problems with upkeep of the park since it had closed. It hasn't run since 2009.
Right. And that all started when Six Flags, the bankruptcy, and that they went into the closure of the park. And what Sheldon wrote about essentially pointed out that some of the things like winterizing rides, replacing water pumps, and things of that nature just hadn't been done. The Fair Board says that they've done the best they can. Or they've used their resources the best of their abilities. But the Holiday World people, the Cook family, have been somewhat critical of the state of the park.
And after the Six Flags bankruptcy, then we saw Ed Hart attempt to put together a deal to reopen the park. As you mentioned, the Bluegrass Boardwalk opening was scheduled for 2013. How firm is this 2014 opening date now?
Well, on Wednesday, Mike Camp, who's one of the partners, was at the meeting in Frankfurt, and he said that he believes 2014 is the realistic date because of the work that they have to do. So I think if there's one thing we can all conclude from watching this process is there have been a lot of dates thrown out there, but 2014 is the date that they're using right now. Mike Camp was asked about 2013. He said it's just doesn't appear likely. I don't know if that means there's some outside hope that they could open as early as next summer, but the plan and what they do plan to ask the Fair Board to do soon is to get formal approval to open in 2014 as opposed to 2013.
And while you're here, let's talk about the Bridges Project. You do a lot of writing on the Bridges Project. You had an article a few weeks ago about this tunnel that's part of the approach to the East End Bridge. And this week we also saw the Indianapolis Star had a report on the tunnel. And Chris Sikich, who wrote the article, he joins us by phone. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Chris, there's been a lot of talk about the tunnel, but I think a lot of folks still may not know exactly what it is or how it came about as part of a Bridges Project.
Sure. It looks like about 20 years ago, preservationists were able to get a historical listing for an estate down there on the Kentucky approach to the river, and it was part of an attempt to stop the bridge from going through that land. Now, 20 years later, the project is going forward, and the highway departments have decided to tunnel underneath the land. That's going to cost $255 million, and Indiana taxpayers are going to pick up that part of the project.
And something you'd looked into, essentially just asking the question of why this is still in the project. And Marcus, you even had written about some of the alternatives that were talked about and the routes essentially not taken.
Yeah, and you know, as people here in Louisville know and in this area know, this is obviously a very contentious part of the Bridges Project, and has gotten more so in the past 4 or 5 years, mainly as the cost of that tunnel has increased. Originally, it was to be, I think, well below $100 million. Now, of course, as Chris mentioned, it's gotten much higher, and as a result of that, there have been now two efforts to look at taking the property under which the tunnel would pass off of the National Register. The intent being that if it's taken off that register, if it loses the historic status, you could pursue other options such as a wide open cut, the kind you see all over the United States, instead of using a tunnel. And that was the options like that were considered in the recent environmental impact. But ultimately, the two states decided to not pursue that.
And Chris, how historic or how important is it to really preserve this land, this Drummondard Estate land?
Well, that's really a question for Kentucky, I think. I drove down there, and I couldn't see anything particularly significant about the estate. It looks like preservationists say it's significant because the Olmsteds prepared a plan for it at the turn of the 20th century, although two reports cited by the states themselves found little to no parts of the plan had been implemented. In fact, none of the trees were planted as part of the plan at all. So, as Marcus said, there were two attempts to delist it. Now, Kentucky owns the project, and I think some taxpayers down there would like to see Kentucky try to delist the project. so that we could save $200 million to pave through the trees rather than build a tunnel. However, both highway departments say that would just take too much time.
And what's the response from the Bridges Authority, Marcus?
Well, I think right now the Bridges Authority defers a lot of the questions about the tunnel to the two states because it's more of a state issue. I think Chris in his story did talk to Steve Schultz about that, and if I recall, Steve basically tried not to get in the middle of that. Am I right, Chris?
Yeah. It's not one state versus the other. It sounds like there's been a lot of wrangling about exactly how to proceed for a long time on this project, and both states have a deal that's funded that they can agree to, and it sounds like they're full steam ahead on starting construction. They don't want to let anything get in the way.
All right, and we still see some efforts from the folks who are opposed to the Bridges Project or portions of the Bridges Project pushing for this tunnel to be removed, pushing for some changes to the preservation or to the historical declaration. How likely is any of that to really happen?
It doesn't seem very likely at all. Both requests have been denied. I've been getting phone calls all week from people trying to get Kentucky to petition to delist the property again, and it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. I've talked to the Indiana governor's office this week, and they're ready to move forward. They have a deal. They want to, they're interested in the economic development that the project is going to bring on Indiana's side of the river, and they feel like they have to build this tunnel to get the project done. It's really not unlike a lot of business deals. I think businesses go into these cities and they kind of know before they build a mall, say, that there are certain things they may have to pay more for. And I think the state sees it this way. They want that development, and it's going to cost them $200 million more to build a tunnel, and they think that's worth it.
And I think it's also interesting to note that both in 2008 and 2009, the state of Kentucky was very much interested in doing a contingency plan for what would happen if the tunnel were taken out. They have heard many, many times from lawmakers. I've sat through committee meetings where lawmakers have asked, why are we building this through woods or underneath one house? And Kentucky took a really serious attempt. They looked at it very seriously in 2008 and again in 2009, but ultimately neither state, as Chris says, seems willing to take that additional step and to really push for a different plan out there.
All right. Marcus Green from the Louisville Courier-Journal and Chris Sikich from the Indianapolis Star. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.